Luke didn't look pleased when Mara left him with Dracaena, nor when she claimed she needed to do something back at the suite, but he didn't argue. He didn't need to. She knew he'd get there as quickly as possible. As she entered, R2-D2 rolled away from his post at the local data feed in the kitchen and whistled a query. No thanks, R2, I don't need you at the moment. He wheeled around and retreated. Mara took a chair with her back to the broad window, sank down, and withdrew deep into herself. Focusing the force finely, she confirmed that the odd sense lay deep in her uterus on one side. It was a thickening of cells, almost like a tumor, multiplying more quickly than her normal cells. She probed deeper for their cellular essence. Shifting her grip on the force, she poised to destroy their blood flow. Then she sensed something weirdly familiar. Besides the tumor-like echo of her own cellular essence, she sensed another human life signature. It was Luke's. By all the star dragons ever spawned, that could mean only one thing. Mara's eyes flew open, her arms and legs stiffened. Pregnant? This couldn't have happened. She'd taken all precautions. Her bizarre disease had transformed molecules and cells and attacked discrete organs. It could be death or disfigurement or some other unimaginable horror to an unborn child. Did she carry her posterity or her death inside her? The tall front door slid open. Luke plunged through, and before he even got close, she felt his mind trying to grab her, protect her. What's wrong? He demanded. Mara, what is it? Do you always think you have to rush in and save someone? She asked, making a vain stab at sounding wry and superior, but her voice shook. Luke dropped to his knees beside her chair. He seized her hand. Mara, what is it? The disease? She took his hand. She laid it over her abdomen. Feel this, she said softly. Use the force and tell me what has happened. He arched his eyebrows and frowned up at her. Don't argue, she said. Just do it. I want an unbiased second opinion. She watched his eyes. They narrowed and the line of his eyebrows softened. He was preparing to comfort her, to do whatever he must. Then his eyes widened, sending a sudden blue flash up at her face. This wasn't my idea, Mara swallowed on a dry throat. It's already in terrible danger. Mara, he interrupted. He seized her hand. Mara, we're all in danger. Anything could kill any one of us, today, tomorrow. She nodded silently, struck once again by Luke's unwavering faith in goodness and his hope in the light. He shifted his hand slightly, shaking his head in plain disbelief. Life is risk, he murmured. I don't feel anything dangerous about this. Not yet, Mara whispered. Some hours later, Mara sat staring out the transperisteel window, watching traffic lights flow across the skyline. She'd wrenched her thoughts back to Duro and Centerpoint Station, non-functional again. She had the sensation that a pattern was emerging. Do you think Leia is on top of this shipping problem? She asked. Luke's voice spoke out of the darkness. By now, she's probably either solved it or sent Han to fix it. They've got to be in close contact. But you'd like to ship over to Duro and check it out. Stay out of my mind, Jade. Without even trying, she sensed his glee at having turned her customary rebuke back on her. I'd rather go myself than send somebody else into danger, he said. I'll take Anakin, if you don't mind. Mara glared into the darkness. I'm coming with you. Mara, I don't want to put you in danger right now. Who's got the better danger sense? Mara said. My instincts are shifting, she admitted, diverting his thrust before he could make it. I'm getting protective too, Luke, already, but in me, she explained, protective is active. I'm going with you. Randa Basadi Diori stared hard at the Rin who had been assigned to keep watch on the communications board, and him. The creature seemed to be asleep. Silently, Randa activated a private frequency. Clicking the transmission switch did not activate his Kajitix repeater network because one of the Duros' orbital cities was in the way. He waited a moment, then clicked the transmitter again. This time, a soft series of tones answered. He leaned close to the transmitter.
This is Randa,
he said softly, keeping one eye on the sleeping Rin guard.
Who is on watch?
He heard static for a long time. Then, his parents' voice.
I am well, he told her, and on Duro. I have only moments. I might be able to buy our people some concessions from the Yuuzhan Vong. There are two young Jedi here. I might be able to deliver one. If they would be interested, have them contact me at the settlement they call 32.
Well done, Rhonda,
Borga said.
Something with which to bargain. We have too little of that. We are trying to win rights to Tatooine as a safe world. I will do what I can.
The moment Rhonda signed off, he wondered if he'd done the right thing. Selling Jason might be a mistake. Well, he could always claim the young human escaped. With two options open, his fantasies of a strike team and the chance of buying his people a haven, one or the other would surely turn for his benefit, maybe both. He turned his head slightly. The ineffectual Rin guard slept on. Keeping peace between research scientists who were competing for limited resources was starting to remind Leia of trying to feed two-year-old force-strong twins from the same plate. Only her hopes for a reborn world and a refugee haven kept her going. As the scientists continued to bicker, she frowned at the room's single vacant chair. Once again, Dasid Kriar had begged off by comlink. Once, she hadn't minded it. Three times, she disliked it. But this made five meetings out of five. No wonder Kriar's fellow workers resented him.
He's reactive, the meteorologist said. He responds to crises only if we point them out.
The microbiologist raised a finger.
But he has solved every one of them. We've kept him so busy fixing our problems that he hasn't had time to do anything original lately.
Rubbish,
the meteorologist responded. We all work hard. And they were off again. This time, Leia let them run. Down a stone tunnel between Gateway's laboratory building and the toxic marshes, Noma Nor had set up an underground office. Leia Organa Solo's people had dug out the long tunnel. He'd created a side passage using small organisms that fed on soft rock. As they bloated and died, he disposed of them by the thousands deep in the marshes. There they decomposed, their gut bacteria working the miracles that delighted Organa Solo's people. He marched through his outer chamber, fingering the disengagement spot on his Gableth masker. Pore by pore, it pulled out of his body. He gritted his teeth. Unlike War Master Tsavong La and the rest of them, he did not believe that his pain fed the gods. He claimed to serve Yun-Harla, the trickster. And if she did exist, she probably loved the deception. But Noma Nor served only himself and his chance of promotion. He had told the War Master the truth, by one definition. Leia Organa Solo was not true Jedi, and her daughter still was not proven. But if Tsavong La thought of them as true Jedi, he would be all the more impressed when Noma Nor destroyed them. He plucked one of his tiny pets off the wall and hefted it one-handed. It didn't feel quite fully grown, which made it perfect for another purpose. Stretching up, he pressed its wriggling cilia deep into a ceiling crack. He'd weakened several sections of ceiling this way, then stationed other kinds of creatures down in the fracture zones. On his command, they could inflate themselves like woodcutters' wedges, bringing down the ceiling. It was simply one more precaution. Tsavong La stroked the villip in his privacy chamber. His agents had recently delivered a newly budded subordinate villip to their contact on Coruscant. This first time, his contact might need a few moments to realize she was being called. On future occasions, his agents would deliver appropriate discipline if she delayed. She must have been eager. In only 1 minute, the villip softened and everted on its stand. An aristocratic nose emerged first, then a dominating chin, strong cheekbones, a firm, stern mouth.
Senator Shesh, he said, I will receive your report.
The villip rotated slightly forward. She must have inclined her head, a sign of respect.
We are withdrawing from Kupindi,
she said.
And from Rodia, in turn, we would like some assurance that your invasion is nearly complete. Surely you can provide your people with homes and sustenance now. Leave us the worlds that remain. We must learn to live alongside each other in peace.
His eyes narrowed, and he wondered if he was translating the word peace incorrectly. In the Yuuzhan Vong tongue, peace meant willing and appropriate submission, and flowed from a submissive underling to a conqueror, never in both directions. Our ultimate need, he said, is the system you have prepared. For that, receive thanks. From Duro, he could neutralize the famous drive yards in her home system of Kuat, as well as the monstrous weapon at Corellia. But she had been told nothing of these plans.
You have assured me you will set agents to work sabotaging center point.
The villip inclined itself again.
As soon as it can be done.
You are to be praised, he told her, for helping bring about a lasting peace for your people. Your role will be widely honored among us and your own folk.
Jason woke up clenching his hands so tightly they hurt. The night felt old, old and deadly. He sat upright, shut his eyes, and tried measuring the feeling. Under his uncle's tutelage, he'd worked on developing his danger sense. It had saved him in several tight situations. If those had been flickers, this was a full-fledged conflagration. It occurred to him that he didn't hesitate to use the Force this way, not in the least. I'm just listening. There's nothing aggressive about it. He threw on the nearest clothes and slipped outside. He found Jaina several huts down. He tiptoed over to her cot and dropped his hand onto her shoulder.
Jaina,
he whispered. Her eyes fluttered open and she turned her head. You don't have to tell me, she said brusquely. Something's wrong.
You feel it too?
Yeah, let's take a look outside. He led the way into the lane between the huts.
Okay, brother, you're the one with a functioning eyesight. Get a good look.
She reached toward an illumination control. Jason almost stopped her. If she turned on the day lamps, she'd wake up the whole colony, maybe for nothing. This didn't feel like nothing, though. He ducked back into the shed and seized a pair of macro binoculars off the supply wall. Clutching them against his chest, he climbed a set of rungs up the shed's exterior wall as the big lights came on. Then he peered out over the colony. Nothing, nothing, and nothing. No skulkers, no lurkers, no obvious breaches or... Wait. A flock of large moths, or maybe small birds, gathered around one of the day lamps. Adjusting the macrobinox resolution control, he got a closer look. More moth than bird, he decided, though the black wings didn't divide quite right. They had horns instead of antennae, and large white imitation eye spots on their black backs. He zoomed out again and spotted a larger group of them, seemingly plastered against the dome's underside up near the top.
What is it? Jaina called up at him. I'm not sure. Looks like... Huh. Almost looks like young Minox or...
Spotting movement at the corner of his peripheral vision, he sighted the Binox down and left. Close at hand, one of the creatures fluttered up from under a hut's eaves. He clambered down. Telling Jaina he'd be right back, he sprinted up the lane to the hut where the creature had taken flight. Under the eaves, something papery dangled from the synthglass roof panel. He flicked it free. Then he ran his hand along the area where he'd flicked it off. He felt a pit.
They're actually eating synthplast.
What do you see? Jaina demanded behind him. His mind flashed back to Yavin 4, a menagerie he'd kept in his room, and a collection of pupa cases where his peglars had overwintered to emerge in the spring as exquisite rose wings. His insides congealed.
Wake Dad up, fast.
They were eating synthblast, and Jason was willing to bet that up out of everyone's reach, they were laying eggs for a second cycle of destruction. Settlement 32 might have a few weeks to find and destroy the eggs, but his danger sense said otherwise. They were feeding now, in numbers that all the dome's emergency repair droids wouldn't be able to stop. Jason switched on his comlink and pressed in an ID sequence.
go?
A Rin voice growled.
Did somebody lose track of the day cycle?
Romany, Jason said. I need you. Emergency.
Jaina came back at a quick walk.
Dad's coming.
Next, he called Metsa. He met her and Romany at the open area at the center of the Rin group's wedge of huts. By this time, Han had arrived. Quietly, Han said, without panicking anybody, get your people suiting up, just in case. Metsa honked scornfully and jogged away.
Look at this,
Droma said, holding something in one hand. Jason, Han, and Jaina circled him. Droma held up a clear bottle. Trapped inside, a white-eyed moth attacked the synthplast with relish. Viewed from below, its mouth parts looked like twin rasps. They ground against the clear surface and then rotated inward, swallowing the dust. Worse than Minox, Han grunted. That's it. Jason, get on the horn to Gateway. We're getting out. Jason sprinted back to the control shed. Rhonda sat up, slowly blinking his huge eyes. He belched. Jason ignored him and strode to the comtech.
I need Gateway. Intercolony assistance.
The tech punched panels. To Jason's relief, a crisp voice came back instantly.
Gateway.
Gateway, this is 32. We've got a breach pending, a big one. We need the evacuation crawlers.
On their way. What kind of breach?
I don't know. We've got some kind of infestation.
Copy that. We'll send the crawlers.
Jason took a deep breath and looked over the Rin area. The alert was going well, with the last families donning gear and proceeding toward the gate area. Near the top of the dome, Jason could see a dribble of gray haze starting to flow from the area thickest with moths. The colony's breach siren sounded. Then he spotted another gray dribble. Moths skittered away from the second breach spot, settled closer to a strut, and started chewing again. Jason hoped Duro's atmosphere would kill the creatures. He grabbed his comlink.
Dad?
Gateway's here, Junior. Bring him on.
As the crawler lurched along, the warmth and odor of several hundred none-too-clean bodies, compounded by nervous sweat, assaulted Jason's nose. He felt lucky to be next to a hatch. He'd be one of the first off.
Lovely, Jaina murmured. Where's my breath mask?
At the far end of the hold, someone started singing. Singly and in groups, Rin joined the melodies, some whistling harmonies through their perforated beaks. Jason didn't need words to recognize a traveling song. The perennial outcasts were moving on to their next adventure. Jason's comlink chirruped.
Jason Solo, you're the one who called over?
Affirmative.
Gateway crew deck here. Tell me again what caused the breach.
Jason explained. When he got to the point about the moth creatures pupating on the outside of sleeping huts, there was a long silence from Gateway. Then the voice said,
copy. We're calling ahead about decontamination.
The refugees close enough to hear Jason's comlink turned their heads.
Believe me, Jason said. Nobody brought a pupa.
Not deliberately,
the comlink voice said.
But one egg stuck to one hairy Rin will start the cycle.
Fine. We'll go through decontamination, but don't discriminate against Rin. Whatever goes for them goes for Vors and Vuvrians and humans and the hut, he added.
When the shaking and thrumming of the transport died away, something clanged against the hatch. The crew had moved a ramp up to the hatch. When it opened, crewers called commands, directing the debarking refugees to fan out and keep moving. The crawlers had been driven inside a mammoth metal room, larger than many docking bays, and sealed off from the rest of the Gateway Dome. A chem-suited crewer waved Jason and Jaina aside, so they headed for an elevated platform and spotted their father on his way to the same spot, trading shoves with Droma. Through a bay door that resealed instantly, there whirred a small ground effect vehicle marked administration. Four figures sat inside, wearing brilliant orange chem suits and full helmeted masks. Jason appreciated their situation. Like the crewers, anybody who joined them in quarantine would face decontamination. Then, he got a feeling about that vehicle. Incredulous, he nudged Jaina. She'd been right here, all along, at Gateway. Jaina nudged him back. They turned so they could watch their father with side vision. The second smallest of the three orange-suited figures jumped out of the vehicle. Her face was shrouded, but her determined gait was unmistakable, and Jason felt her through the force. Her smaller shadow had to be one of the Nogri. Han and Droma strode up. Han looked half ready to send Droma flying. "No, they don't have pulsar combs. We're just going to have to do this the hard way," Droma interrupted. "What do you care if they take off that little patch of fur on top of your empty head? Do you have any idea how cold?" The orange-suited figure reached them. "Hello," Han said, hastily setting his dirt-streaked face to a slight smile. "Thanks for sending the crawlers." Han extended a hand. "Han Solo." Instead of taking his hand, the administrator reached up for her mask's clasps. "Hey, wait," Han exclaimed. "You'll end up in decontamination." She pulled off her mask one-handed. A long coil of dark brown hair tumbled loose.
"That's all right."
Leia stared at Han's weary face, his gaping hazel eyes, his slack jaw stubbled with gray. Luke and Mara must have known Han was here and assumed she did, too. How many people made that assumption, and so they just didn't tell her? Now she knew she might have only a moment to reach him before he remembered the last time she spoke to him, angrily. She flung her arms around Han. His body remained stiff, but he laid an arm on her shoulders. She backed away from him.
"Hello, Mom."
Jason opened his arms, then hesitated. Since she was committed to quarantine now, Leia yanked off her chem suit, then flung her arms around Jason.
"By the Force, you're as big as your father."
Then she spotted Jaina hanging back.
"What are you doing here?"
Jaina dangled a pair of fancy goggles from one hand.
"Sick leave. We tried to find you."
Leia's stomach took a dive.
"Were you injured?"
"Temporary partial blindness, nothing serious."
Jaina lowered her voice.
"Get it straight with Dad, Mom. That's first."
Jaina turned and strolled back toward the Rin mob. Smiling ruefully, Jason placed both hands on Leia's shoulders. He gently turned her toward Han, who had thrust his hands into his pockets.
"Guess it's time I found something to do."
Droma replaced the soft cap he'd doffed.
"Good to see you again, Princess Leia."
He followed Jaina.
"Han, I'm sorry," Leia said. "It's been tough lately, really hard."
"Yeah, well," he firmed his lips. "You probably won't forget some things, but I was hoping you'd forgive them."
Leia threw her arms around him again. This time, he returned the embrace. His arms gripped her. His breath had the sweetness of, well, of a wet Wookiee. She held her breath while she kissed him. Then there was no more time for reconciliation. Among the milling Rin, she spotted Jaina with a group of grizzled females, once again wearing her mask.
"How badly was she hurt, Han?"
"She ended up EV." The thought of her daughter drifting in frigid vacuum in the middle of a battle made Leia's stomach churn again.
"I could process her through decontamination quickly."
"No," Han said. "Only time will fix this. No special treatment for humans, and especially not our family. These Rin have been kicked around for centuries. They're not a big group, but they're loyal to people who treat them decently."
"We'll process the sick and injured as priority. Then we can include Jaina.
Unless she'd rather stay in quarantine indefinitely than get her head shaved. She's at that age, you know. Young men are looking." Han reached out and fingered the long coil of hair that hung forward over Leia's uniform. "Can the old guys look, too?" She touched his hand.
"I guess it'll have to come off, Han."
He shrugged. "It'll grow. It'll just take a while."
"Will you stick around while it does?"
She tried not to plead, but she wanted to. He ran a hand over his unruly hair. "Hey, someday I might lose mine for good. We'll call it a dry run." Then he winked, and she melted inside. Jason processed through decontamination the next afternoon and reported to the admin building. According to Leia's aide, Jaina was outdoors in Gateway's ship lot helping an inspection team. Leia sat at her big desk, straightening her white head wrap.
"I'm glad you're here, Jason. A Corduro freighter we just offloaded is missing a third of its cargo. Think you could get anywhere with Corduro's administration? Jason gasped. I haven't got much experience with negotiating. Leia shook her head. No, but you're a solo, and that ought to impress them. I haven't got time to fly up to Baburo, and your dad says you're trying to get more involved in non-Jedi activities. I can sympathize with that. Her left cheek twitched. More than you know. I guess you probably can, Jason admitted. His mom would understand that not everyone who showed Jedi talent was destined to follow that path. Jason ran a hand over his strangely smooth head. Droma just brought 32's Howl Runner over. I could take it up to Baburu, see what I can do. I'd appreciate that. Be careful, Jason. Always, Mom. May the Force be with you, anyway. You too. Randa Basadi Diori propelled himself along Gateway's main street. He had been kicked out of the communication area, the one place where he finally could hope for decent transmission equipment. He must contact Borga. He would find a way to get off this drab, impoverished world and rejoin her. He wet his lips. He needed a pilot, of course. He might convince the young solo female. As his people said, where persuasion fails, bribery prevails. His Khajiitic had wealth on worlds the Yuuzhan Vong hadn't touched. The young Jedi must have a weakness. Jewels, shimmer silk, better yet, a ship of her own. Encouraged by his thoughts, he hurried up the sandy lane to the Selkor shelter he'd been issued, a miserable blue tent in Gateway's Tyana Ruins district. Pausing inside his door flap, he spotted an unfamiliar lump beneath his bed covers. Reaching around with his tail, he flicked off the covers. A leathery ball, not quite the size and shape of a human head, lay on the sleeping mat. It was a Yuuzhan Vong Vilip, like the ones he'd seen on board the cluster ship. Then he trembled from head to tailtip. For this Vilip to show up in his dwelling so soon, the Yuuzhan Vong must have an agent inside the Gateway Dome, masquerading as human, an agent who now knew how and where to find him. Undaunted, Randa picked up the leathery creature and sank onto his rumpled mat. His loyalty was to Borga, and he had promised his parent that he would do everything he could to further the bargaining position of the Hutts. One Jedi for Tatooine? That seemed like a fair price. He stroked the Vilip, then set it down, wondering who would answer. Features appeared on the Vilip, a prominent brow ridge, splayed nubs of nose, cheeks with deep sacks under the eyes.
Randa Basadi Diori,
it said.
Finally, you report.
Randa didn't recognize the face's fiercely chiseled features. He tipped his head respectfully toward the Vilip.
You have an advantage of knowledge on me, my lord. I am War Master Tsavong La. Can you truly offer a Jedi? I can,
Randa answered. War Master, his feelers had brought in a prize catch. Now to lure him to Duro for the New Republic to snatch.
His name is Useless Hutt,
the War Master said.
Your parent told me what you want in return. Know this. The Hutts betrayed us. Only exemplary service will win back our trust.
I know and respect your caution, War Master. I would be pleased to deliver this Jedi to you personally, War Master. As for my request, what use to you is Tatooine, a forsaken world, barely...
The Vilip's rendition of the War Master's eyes looked like unfathomable black holes.
Why should I value your sense of honor enough to come personally to Duro?
He demanded. This, Randa admitted, was the gaping hole in his net.
You would honor me deeply, he began, and be honored in return.
You,
the War Master said,
are not worthy of honor. Nevertheless, I will take this Jedi. Arrange to deliver him. and I will consider your request. Fail to deliver or offer the slightest deceit, and I shall flay the hide from your body with my kufi.
The villip softened, its features retracted, and Aranda was left to wonder what he had done. The alien's agent here in Gateway could grab Jason or stab Randa in his sleep. Had he just made a terrible mistake? Was there really any way he could hand Jason over? Surely the young Jedi would come to his senses, sweep out his lightsaber, and fight back? What Randa really needed then was an extra layer of defense. Dura was protected by only one Mon Calamari cruiser, the Posey, a few snub fighters, and the orbital city's planetary shields. If he could lure key Yuuzhan Vong personnel here, where the New Republic could trap them, if the New Republic brought an additional battle group closer to Duro, Randa would be defended. The bargain would have to be canceled. He burst out of his shelter and headed to the admin building. There he found two communication techs, a human and a small toothy Tenon, talking to a half-size hollow of a magnificent dark-haired woman. Elated by his good fortune, he muscled the furry Tenon aside.
"Senator Shesh," he gasped, "I have discovered a traitor on Duro. The Yuuzhan Vong have planted an agent here, surely a scout for a future invasion. You must double our defenses, or all these refugees surely will die. You are in a position to send help from the military. Send it quickly."
Senator Vicky Shesh turned her head slightly.
"Haven't we spoken once before, sir?"
He bowed deeply.
"I am Randa Besadi Diori, and..."
"You say you have unmasked a Yuuzhan Vong agent inside the Gateway Dome?"
"Not unmasked," he said boldly, "but discovered irrefutable evidence of his presence."
"Then we thank you, Randa Besadi Diori. Deliver your evidence to Gateway's administrator, Ambassador Organa Solo. I have just been apprised of her presence. Her security force will investigate."
"I thank you for your time and attention, Senator."
Randa swaggered out of the building. He would do just as the Senator suggested, give Leia Organa Solo the villip and let her deal with it. His prompt action, realizing he'd made a mistake, had just saved him and maybe Gateway itself from a grim fate. How clever he was. Senator Vicky Shesh of Kuat shut down the holoprojector and reached for her maggot-textured villip. This would not wait. Business, like diplomacy, required making concessions, and she had no qualms about reporting one young Hutt's treachery. It was unusual for Kubaz to visit Baburo, the largest orbital city in the Duro system, but nowadays Baburo's docks were so crowded with off-world construction workers, shippers, and camp followers that the dark, short-trunked trio who arrived, trailed by a bronze astromech droid, attracted little attention in the offloading area. The Baburo Docking Authority agent eyed their credentials. According to the datapad, these weren't typical refugees from Kubindi's recent invasion. This family had holdings in the core worlds, and they were looking for trade. That explained the fine yacht they docked in Slip 18L.
"Everything seems to be in order, gentles."
The tall Duros momentarily mated their datapad with one of his own, programming a map from Port Duggan to Corduro Shipping's main office at Duggan Station. Oddly, a minute after they had passed from sight, he had no memory of their arrival. Mara found the hooded cloak, trunked mask, and goggles stifling, but she took advantage of the disguise to observe Duro's reactions as Port Duggan's long rideway carried them up the dockyard arm to Duggan Station. They had heard that the Duros, like other species on worlds the Yuuzhan Vong hadn't reached, resented the refugee influx, and what she saw confirmed this. She caught red-eyed glares and stares. They'd arrived from Coruscant in Mara's newly modified ship, the Jade Shadow, a yacht Lando had picked up for a song, so he claimed. Carrying Luke's fighter in the bay and escorted by Anakin in his own X-Wing, she brought the Shadow over Duro's South Pole, using one of Gant's universal transponder codes. Groundside, they locked down Anakin's X-Wing. Then they all boarded the Shadow again. Flying with Luke as co-pilot, Mara made a micro-jump out system, changed transponder codes, and they arrived at Duro as a well-heeled Kubaz family. The rideway decanted them in a broad open area that their datapad labeled Duggan Station. At the other side of the open area, Aduros stood on a knee-high platform and spoke through a powerful amplifier, addressing a crowd of 50 or 60, almost exclusively Duros.
Symbiosis,
the Duros shouted,
has been preached since time immemorial. Has it made us free? Does it make us safe? They say we depend on each other.
Now she took on a simpering tone.
That we need each other. Hot slime.
Several Duros cheered. Mara backed up against Luke and turned her head slightly. This kind of talk could finish what's left of the New Republic. I've heard enough, he said. They found an inexpensive hostel, where Luke took a two-room unit. R2-D2 rolled straight to a data station and plugged himself in. Mara peeled out of her disguise, emerging in a comfortable flight suit. Anakin's disguise already lay strewn all over his cot. He sat down, stretching and flexing his fingers. After all the New Republic has done for them, how could they think that way? That's just one troublemaker, Mara said. But sometimes it only takes one. Remember Ramamul and that firebrand Nominor? For Mara, Ramamul had been a second encounter. Serving as a minor diplomat's bodyguard to festivities on Mana 2, she'd endured Anor's rhetoric until even the gentle native Sunnacy couldn't tolerate him and asked him to leave. Anor fanned an intrasystem resentment into open warfare at Ramamul, got most of his own people killed, and himself too. But one troublemaker can sometimes be reached, Mara said. Luke nodded. Reasoned with. I hope that's what we've got here. R2-D2 bleeped urgently. Luke paused halfway through pulling off one boot. What is it, R2? Mara couldn't follow the stream of toots and whistles. Evidently, Luke couldn't either. Hold on, hold on. He pushed up off his cot and crossed to the readout over R2-D2's data port. Mara felt a sudden somber change in his mood. Nothing serious, he told her. Everyone's all right. But Han and Jason's dome just got evacuated into layers, some kind of infestation. Jason's probably collecting again, Anakin said. Not funny, Mara muttered. Luke's eyes unfocused for a moment. They're all fine, he said, and Jason just arrived up here on Burburo. Great, Anakin muttered. Anakin, Luke said softly. Jason has to find his own path. Sometimes that takes a while. All right, Mara said. We'll bump into him sooner or later, but for now our priorities are to find Tresina's missing apprentice and figure out Duro's political situation. Number one's probably dependent on number two. Right, Luke said. I'll talk to Corduro Shipping. Unless I'm wrong, that's where Jason is headed. An idea was forming at the back of Mara's mind. She'd brought along other disguises. Other people would have come to Duro fishing for well-formulated reasons not to open their worlds to refugees. The Kuati Senator Vicky Shesh certainly hadn't established Selkor's main camp anywhere near Kuat. Maybe Mara could scare up some information on who else here had anti-refugee leanings. She hauled one of her duffels into the refresher. When she stepped out half an hour later, Anakin grabbed his cot's edge with both hands. His eyebrows rose so far that they almost vanished under his dark hair. Laughing inwardly, Mara tilted up her chin and stared down at him.
You may kiss our palm, she said in a languid Kuati accent.
Wow, he choked.
Luke folded his arms and leaned against the wall, grinning. He'd seen her in many guises, but this one was spectacular. She cuffed Anakin on the shoulder.
Don't drool on the carpet, she said.
I'm surprised you're still here.
We won't be for long. Luke pushed off the wall. We have an appointment. That is, two Kubas have an appointment.
I'm just going to nose around, Mara said. See what I can get from that crowd down at Port Duggan. She read, be careful, in his eyes. Respecting his restraint, she didn't promise that she would. She simply nodded. An aide ushered Luke and Anakin into Corduro Vice Director Durgard Brauren's sumptuous office. At the room's front was a narrow counter with a lone Duros sitting behind it. The triangular Corduro insignia on his right breast had a gold edging, and gray-green skin hung in folds under his chin. He stood to greet the pair of imitation Kubas.
Gentles, how may I serve you?
Luke wasn't sure what information might be available. He meant to convince Vice Director Brauren that he and Anakin were harmless, trying to bluff their way into dangerous circles. In his best Kubas were overlaid basic, Luke said,
Many of our people are homeless. We have set up a colony on Yagdul, but we need supplies. I was told there were basic goods to be bought here for a price.
The Duras reached toward his countertop.
The price could be more than you wish to pay, gentles.
Two large humans appeared from behind a brown wall screen. Luke recognized the determination in their eyes, then the hopelessness behind it. He'd seen that mixture before, in Peace Brigade collaborators, humans who were already convinced the Yuuzhan Vong would win this war. That was an unwelcome complication. Had Corduro been corrupted? Or had Thrinny Vey vanished because she detected collaboration on an even wider scope? A second thought hit him like an ion cannon blast. Were the Yuuzhan Vong already targeting Duro, and were these their advance agents? He scrambled to regain his composure.
We are prepared, he whirred, to offer New Republic credits, Kubindi bonds, redeemable off-world, or...
A tone sounded, and their host straightened.
One moment, gentles.
Brereton touched something in front of him, eyed a readout, and half smiled.
Gentles, please linger for a few minutes. I am reminded of a guest that my staff has kept waiting so that he will know his place. I shall admit him now. Keep still, or your escorts will have to see you out.
Gladly, Luke whirred, for my people's sake.
He gestured Anakin back toward the brown wall screen. Luke sensed Jason as he walked in. To his deep concern, Jason neither probed nor reached out with the Force. In fact, Luke sensed a deliberate damping of the Force all around his elder apprentice, worse than before. He told Anakin that Jason must find his own path. He knew it with all his heart and mind, but seeing Jason like this hurt badly. Luke had made mistakes. He knew how painful the consequences might be, especially here and now. He stretched out and nudged Jason. Jason had spent most of the last hour in an anteroom waiting for the vice director to admit him. He tried to sit patiently and reflect on his vision. It hadn't exactly called him to diplomacy, but this didn't seem like a wrong path. Now, like an echo out of his vision, he sensed his uncle. There, one of the two Kubas in the corner between muscular bodyguards. The other Kubas was Anakin. From his uncle, he thought he sensed a nudge to get the Duros talking. Straightening, he faced Vice Director Brereton. What an opportunity! He could show his uncle and his brother the direction his vision and conscience and experiences were taking him.
Jedi Jason Solo, this is unexpected.
Sir, I'm here on behalf of some very needy people, the refugees inside my mother's dome.
She is Leia Organa Solo, correct?
Yes, sir. Those refugees are living under unbelievably primitive conditions. They...
Where are your Jedi robes, Jason Solo? Are you here as an infiltrator?
No, Jason spread his hands. Not at all. The Duros pointed a long, knobby hand down at Jason.
Your supply problems are not our concern.
Sir, if our supply shuttles don't get through, people will start to go hungry. We need your help. It's urgent. The Duros reached for the edge of his counter. A high tone sounded. The door behind Jason swished open. Two armed Duros stalked in. What was this? Jason kept his hands lowered.
Sir, I'm just asking for the chemicals we need to grow food. I have no intention of threatening you. No?
The vice director asked.
Your enabling of Centerpoint Station, our near neighbor, changed the power balance in our region. Jedi make me nervous, especially young ones who use words like urgent. Often they don't have the maturity to know when to back down.
Thank you, Kip Duran, Jason muttered to himself. Now he needed to state his position. You have nothing to fear from me, Vice Director. You asked where I left my Jedi robes. At the moment, I have stood down from my status as a Jedi in training. The Duros laughed bitterly.
Any Jedi whose mother is a Skywalker cannot stand down, ever.
Jason clenched his hands at his sides. I'm learning to be my own man, not just my mother's son. This time, the four guards laughed, too.
All right, man, the Vice Director said. What is it you want to offer Corduro Shipping in exchange for this missing cargo?
He wasn't authorized to do this, but... Vice Director, if we settlers, the first people of a new Duro, offered to pay a tariff, a percent of all future goods, would that help ensure delivery? Say, 2%? That seemed plenty generous. The Duro stared over his clasped hands. Jason held his breath.
20,
Brereton replied. Too much. Jason felt increasingly awkward. His mother had authorized him to try diplomacy, but did that include giving away goods?
Selkor negotiated with Corduro for delivery of supplies, Jason insisted. Your people are already being paid. And you, the vice director said, have been sent to me as a negotiator. Fascinating.
He raised a finger, beckoning one bulky aide away from the two inoffensive Kubas.
Jedi Solo, I would like to continue these negotiations. Please consider yourself my guest for the time being, until I can contact your mother and Coruscant. He turned to the aide. Escort young Solo to the guest room in my home. Stay with him, outside, in the hallway. I will speak with him later.
Jason glanced toward the brown wall screen on his way out. Hope you got what you wanted, Uncle Luke, he thought, knowing his uncle would recognize only an unspoken query. One Kubaz barely nodded. The other turned away.